Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Well, we'll have to wait until I think July 21st for Barbie to come out. So until then, let's look at the releases on our big and small screens this week. With me are the Business Post film journalist, John Maguire, and Irish Times film critic, Tara Brady. Welcome to you both. Will you be going to Barbie?
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Pink shoes at the ready. John, I want to go. Let's look at the small screen first of all. The Heiress and the Heist. It's on RTE1 on Tuesday at 9:35. This is the documentary about Rose Dugdale, an English aristocrat who joined the IRA and was involved in a few high-profile art thefts. It's in three parts and it's getting good advance reviews.
Yeah, it's very difficult, first of all, we will say, for any filmmaker to follow Once Upon a Time in Northern Ireland, the BBC five-part series, which was just phenomenal. And there are so many stories to tell. This is one of them. Now, I think this story has been told before. It is Rose Dugdale.
Yeah, so I was actually going to ask you about that, because this has been told before, but often
not in this kind of detail. Yeah, and in this kind of context, the context that the director David Harvey and the talking heads that he assembled, people like David Davenport, Dermot Ferriter, and Edwina Curry, who was a contemporary of Dugdale's at Oxford, the context that they give, not only to the crimes that Dugdale committed, but for the social context and in the context of the Troubles for the Times 50 years ago, let's say. But when you're watching it, you're thinking, it's actually astonishing to me that we, 50 years later, we need reminding of the kind of political and social lives that people had at that time, both in Northern Ireland and in the Republic.
Yeah, absolutely, across the whole island, and told in three parts. Is that a good pace?
Yeah, I think so. They start with an introduction to Dugdale herself, the kind of life that she came from. She was the daughter of an aristocratic family. She'd been presented as a debutante to Queen Elizabeth. She was radicalised at Oxford. And after Bloody Sunday in Derry, she started to support the IRA, even stealing from her own family to support that to fund her campaign. She relocated to Northern Ireland and became involved in bombing campaigns, including one daring scheme to drop milk churns loaded with explosives on the RUC station in Strabane. It's not clear, really, and the talking heads confirmed this, whether the IRA actually wanted her or not. She was a volunteer, but she volunteered to be a volunteer, if you know what I mean.
But I think it's probably important at these inflection points. We've had anniversaries, we've other,
well, you know, 50
keeping,
years, yeah, exactly, just, since the Rossborough heist. And it's the Rossborough heist, really, that's the central element of this story in 1974. In April 1974, they broke into the Bite House, Rossborough House, Palladian Mansion in Wicklow, and stole these, priceless, really, pieces of art. 8 million, I think it was at the time. They're valued at over 100 million today. And it is that there is that thing where stealing art, even for ransom, isn't just a theft against the Bite family. It was a theft against all of us.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to saying that. Tara, you also have been looking at some television for us. The Magnificent Seven on RT1 at 3:20. Is that this afternoon? Steve McQueen, but really it's Yul Brynner that they're showcasing.
Yeah, it's really all about Yul Brynner. And it's really interesting because we have, of course, a big Tom Cruise movie coming out tomorrow. But like, Yul Brynner is a really good example of a proper movie star, and obviously how does one define a movie star as opposed to a really good actor? It's a very, very difficult thing to do. You can look at somebody like Grace Kelly, who only really was in a handful of films, but you'd never in your wildest dreams question that she's a movie star. And I think Yul Brynner is one of those, like, this just incredibly fascinating man, from Vladivostok, spent time in China, spent time in France, like, was a trapeze artist, was a singer, and then was in the Actors Studio alongside people like Marilyn Monroe. And because he had this exotic background, he was always being cast, and he was Ramses of Egypt, and he was King Solomon, and he was always getting cast in things that, in a way that obviously nobody would dream of casting somebody like his father was Mongolian, but no one would dream of casting somebody like that in all those different kind of roles now. But it certainly served him well, and he came to prominence as the King of Siam am in The King and I, which just became this like absolute touchstone for him. He ended up performing the role a record-breaking more than 4,000 times on Broadway, and then went on and did a short-lived TV show, Anna and the King, after that. But this is one of those roles that where he's just a guy called Chris, and he's a classic kind of loner in a Western, and he assembles this gang together to fend off a bunch of bandits. And even though the gang has, as you say, people like Steve McQueen and all these like other great movie
it's all about
Yul Brynner, and you can't take your eye. He's amazing.
John, we were just chatting in our earlier section on Barbie and about the risks, the potential risks for Mattel and these kind of big blockbuster, particularly for children animated films. Elemental, another Pixar animation, another animation with a strong message about equality that might find itself caught up in the culture wars. Is that why it's got a bit of a sniffy sort of
bit of that. At its best, Pixar, this is a Pixar film, and at its best, Pixar is unbeatable. They make these charming, clever films that touch your heart and spark your imagination. They're perfect for children. But the studio, which is owned by Disney, is in dire need of a hit. Mm-hmm. And this isn't it, unfortunately. It's been a while since one of their original films connected with audiences in the same way as Toy Story or Up or Inside Out or any of those films. And Elemental isn't the film that marks a recovery either creatively or commercially for Pixar, but it is perhaps better than those sniffy reviews. It's set in the teeming metropolis of Element City. It's populated by people made of fire, earth, air and water, and the water people are the most privileged. The fire people are definitely not. Earth and air, meanwhile, barely register, I suppose, in the story. But the focus is on the relationship and the romance that develops between a fire girl and a water boy, and the prejudices that they both have to overcome in order for the relationship to blossom. Wet Side Story, I suppose you could call it. H2O.
Oh, dear God. Oh,
yeah. Oh. There's worse. H2O, Romeo and Juliet, maybe. Oh. But if the story isn't really of the standard that Pixar have set for themselves, this extraordinary standard.
And that's a problem, because they're constantly trying to get up to one standard that seems to, look, I have to say, Tara, that stunt movies do absolutely nothing for me. I cannot believe that Mission Impossible, which everybody else in the world is probably going to be waiting for, is this the seventh? How many stunts
But be warned, it's two and three quarters hours long, and it's part one. This is the seventh. So eight is on the way and in post production.
Does it warrant the kind of adulation that it gets from fans?
Oh, I think it does. I mean, it's very, very interesting, because like Hollywood, there's a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth in Hollywood at the moment, because a few of the absolute sure thing tent poles have not gone well. The Indiana Jones film did really underperformed and has fallen off completely on its second weekend in the United States. The Flash was an absolute disaster, it's going to be one of the biggest flops of the year. So there's a real sense that suddenly the studios are no longer in touch with their audiences, and that's obviously very frightening.
What age is Tom Cruise now? Because he still does a lot of the stunts himself.
He is in his 60s, but I think that's a crucial thing with the difference between the Mission Impossible films and the Indiana Jones films. The Indiana Jones films, they spent $295 million on an awful lot of digitized effects. But the thing is that even if you don't know you're looking at digitized effects, your brain does. And there's a whole branch of neuroscience that's looking at that at the moment. You don't remember things that are like computer generated in the same way you remember the real things.
We should have put that to Shane O'Mara earlier there now. We should have kept him on the line. But worth it for you?
Yeah, definitely worth it. And it has that real tactile quality. If they're in Venice, it's really Venice. Yeah. It's not...
It jumps off a cliff.
On a motorbike with a parachute.
It isn't a stunt double.
He jumps off a cliff.
Tom Cruise jumps off a cliff. Who wouldn't want to see that?
Yeah. Good man, Tom.
And definitely, while your bum is a little bit numb at the end, it does zip by. It's everything that a James Bond film should be, but hasn't been in about 10 years.
So heroes, anti-heroes, superheroes, the tobacco force are the subject of Quentin Dupieux's Smoking Causes Coughing. It's in the IFI, Cineworld and other cinemas. John, that sounds quite funny.
It's funny, yeah. It's certainly funny. This is the French lunatic Quentin Dupieux, and he's given us a murderous car tire in rubber, a man-sized insect in mandibles, and a guy who's played by Oscar winner Jean-Jules Dargent, who goes on a murderous rampage because he wants this particular jacket. He makes these films that have these extraordinary premises and these kind of madcap ideas in them. But the key to Depew's films and all of his films is that the actors play it straight. They play it straight down the line. It's the comedy comes from the situations and from the ideas. It doesn't necessarily, it's not a succession of gags. And this is Smoking Causes Coughing. It has this gang of exhausted superheroes known as the Tobacco Force. They go on this team building exercise where they go camping in the countryside and they swap stories over the campfire. Each of those stories are brought to life. And it's hit and miss, as all of these kind of films are. It's only 77 minutes long. You're talking about Mission Impossible. You could watch watch this twice. You could watch this twice in one Mission Impossible. Some of them are more engaging than others, but they're all predicated on this notion that ordinary people are driven to the edge of madness by some strange technology or supernatural event.
Speaking of funny stuff, Tara, before I let you go, The Outlaws, it's a new comedy on Netflix, came out on Friday, and it features our very own Pierce Brosnan. Netflix spent a lot of money on it. Is it very funny?
No, it's not very funny. But I mean, I love Pierce Brosnan's kind of later comedic work, and I think he has proved his kind of chops. I really enjoyed the Eurovision one.
He looks as if he's having fun.
He does look as if he's having a ball during this. I didn't have as much fun watching him. It comes through Adam Sandler's production company, and it's very much the kind of film that Adam Sandler was starring in 25 years ago. And it's kind of one of the dafter ones of those. It's about this very straight list. Bank manager played by Adam Devine, who starts to suspect that his glamorous in-laws are in fact outlaws, hence the title. That's the pitch. They don't really do very much with it. It just gets all very chaotic and action-packed, but I'm sure it'll pass the time for most people.
What about John Ziggy Stardust, the global premiere?
This was last Tuesday for a special 50th anniversary screening in cinemas, but it is on video on demand from August the 12th. In 1973,
just explain it. It's actually David Bowie's last performance, isn't it?
And it's his last performance as this character Ziggy Stardust that he had invented, and who had become this massive pop star and this kind of alter ego as Bowie did throughout his career. And it's the revered documentary maker D.A. Pennebaker was there with his cameras in the Hammersmith Odeon in 1973, and 50 years later, the record of that performance has been digitally restored in sound and vision, including previously unseen footage. Now, for Bowie fans and their legion,
that would be a huge
thing, because but for just pop culture aficionados, this is a seminal moment. This really was the death of a rock star live on stage, and people didn't really know what to do about it, and it's taken 50 years for people to come to terms with it, just how important it was, just how in control Bowie was of his public persona. And that's really
and
fascinating
Ringo Starr,
as well.
Everyone is
they were all in the back. Yeah, there's a lot of that kind of backstage stuff in the film. There's a superb moment right at the end where some fans get on the stage and give Bowie a hug, and there's something very touching and everyday about that. And also, you're looking at it now 50 years later saying that could never happen anymore. You're not going to jump on stage for Taylor Swift, you know. So there is that. Most of us,
we were talking about it yesterday.
You wouldn't last very long
to get into it, unless you buy one of those big tickets for the side
but
stage.
We can't have been there. Most of us can't have been there. And this film is a taste of what it was like to witness that kind of rock and roll history. It's really fascinating.
To get close to that, to witness rock and roll.
Yeah.
Albeit from your sofa or having to go see it in a movie.
It's as good as you're going to get.
Honestly, you're looking at the film and you're thinking the Bowie conversation has really only started. Yeah. He's dead, five or six years now. But we're really only coming to terms with what he did as an artist and as a musician. And this film is part of that
conversation. And I do think those retrospectives are important to capture, whether it is history or music or elsewhere. But look, that is all we have time for today. To the Business Post film journalist John Maguire and to film critic for the Irish Times, Tara Brady, thanks both of you for coming in today. You